Hey, book besties, we're your hosts, Kelsey
and Vicky,
and this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience. It may not be suitable for those under 18. Use of profanity is a definite, along with discussions of mature content and sexual themes. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey guys, so before we jump into bookish news and we get into the review, we just kind of wanted to give everybody a little bit of an update on what's been going on in our world. So as the majority of you guys know, we live in Florida, specifically Sarasota, Florida, and we just got hit with Hurricane Milton head on. And so I do want to say, if you're hearing this on Tuesday, I am a fucking badass. Because we are recording this on Monday, the 14th. So if you are hearing this on Tuesday at 7 a.m., and that means I'm a badass and I stayed up and I edited and everything in like such a short time to get it out.
Well, Kelsey, you're a badass anyway, but
if you're not hearing this on Tuesday, I do have a sick toddler at home, so priorities. Anyways.
And also, I think you guys will forgive us for being a couple days late.
Yes.
Or we hope you'll forgive us.
Yeah, especially because I'm also just now realizing as we're talking, I still don't have internet.
Oh, so yeah, you can end with us tonight.
I have no internet. So yeah, so we got hit by Hurricane Milton. We are fine. We are okay. We took no damage at our homes. The shelf is fine. You were without power here for like a couple of days.
We just got our power back on Saturday. So we were without power for a couple of days, but luckily our internet is up. Our building is fine. We did lose some books that were on our book bus, some water damage, but really minimal considering what could have happened. And the apartment is fine. So we really lucked out.
Yeah, I was fully expecting to come home to no home because of across the street is zone A and I'm zone B. And they were like, you're going to get 15-foot storm surge. So I was expecting my house to like be gone. But luckily that didn't happen. I took no damage except for I lost an oak tree in my front yard and I have like some shingles that came off on my roof. But other than that, it's all fine. I don't have internet. So we got power back Friday night, late Friday night, and we still don't have internet. They're saying like possibly by next Monday we should have it. So yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get this out on Tuesday now that I think about it. I'll try to see if I can find internet connection somewhere. I might have to go to E's office because it's like, I don't know how it works, but they have it. I guess maybe because it's ground on campus. So he has internet in his office, but we'll see. Otherwise, it's going to get to you when it gets to you. I'm sorry, guys, if it's late. Mother Nature, we don't have any control over it.
Yeah, so when I put out our teaser graphics online, I'm not going to put a date.
Yeah, it's going to be something to do. Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know when it's happening. We're doing our best.
Yeah, so the biggest part is we are all fine. But yeah, so that's kind of what's been going on in our world. So now let's get into our normal content. So the bookish news for last week, whenever you're hearing this, not sure. I don't have a lot, again, with everything that's been going on. I've been preoccupied with other things. But the two things that I do have to share, and I just want to say, the things that I'm sharing are what I just recently found, because again, I don't have internet, so I was looking this up 5 minutes before we recorded. So if you know something and I don't get to it, it's not that I didn't think it's important. I just really did not have a lot of time to try and source bookish news. But what I did find is Carissa Broadbent. We love Carissa. She's now doing teasers for The Songbird and The Heart of Stone, which is book 3.
And that's the next month, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So 40 days from now is when it comes out. And so she's doing little teasers. They're really funny. Like she put one out for Misha and it was like what her Google history was. And it's just so funny. And I love it that the authors are really jumping on doing these teasers for their upcoming book releases. So if you want to see it, go to her Instagram page. It's all there. The second thing that I have is actually related to this podcast. So we're obviously reviewing Fear the Flames by Olivia Rose Darling today. And she just shared that she finished the second draft of Wrath of Dragons, which is the sequel to Fear Fear the Flames, and it's going to be released sometime in 2025.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so she did share that it's not going to have an indie release or an indie print like Fear the Flames does.
Because that's a long time in between, because Fear the Flames was indie released in 2022.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we're getting an update.
Yeah, so this is just going to be strictly trad published. She did say at the end of her little thing that she's hoping to release one book a year. That's the pace that she wants to set for herself. I don't know how many is going to be in this series. I couldn't find that anywhere. It wasn't until I saw that on her Instagram page that I even knew that there were things in the second book, like for the second book, already planned out, because I couldn't find anything. Like, I couldn't find anything on Goodreads. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, for years there was nothing on.
Yeah, so I'm glad that we finally know. We have a title. I know she's working on it. She said sometime in 2025. So I'll keep looking at that and seeing if we get a date, praying it's before a PolyCon. But yeah, so
I have some PolyCon news. I don't know if you saw. It's not super bookish, but if you are going to a PolyCon, I just found out that they're going to have a tattoo artist there.
Yeah.
That's doing bookish flash. And I went through like all her catalog, all like 200 pieces or whatever.
Yeah, so actually, I really want to applaud that tattoo artist. She originally had the ticket sale event thing, whatever, to fill up her slot scheduled for like the weekend right before Milton hit. And to be fair to the Florida attendees, she pushed it until after the hurricane hit.
Went live yesterday or the day before.
It did.
It was still too early for me to like even think about that sort of thing. You know, like,
yeah.
Like I have to just let it go by and
yeah. I thought about it and I was gonna try and
get a tattoo. Sorry.
I cannot get a tattoo. So yeah, so I was thinking about it and then, you know, health stuff came up, so I can't get a tattoo at the moment. So sad, but at least I knew before I put a deposit down. Although, like, there's already a wait list up. So.
Oh, I'm sure. Like I said, I couldn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Plus, I was on vacation, sort of vacation this week. I went in search of a place with the very cold air conditioning.
Yeah.
To get out of the very hot floor apartment.
And the crazy thing is when FPL says that all power will be restored the very next day, we're going to be in the 50s. Everybody's going to get their power back in time to turn on their heat.
Yeah, not me, literally. Like, I almost made a bed on my lanai because it was so much cooler outside than it was inside the apartment. I was like, I'll just sleep outside and pretend I'm getting it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on from bookish news. So as we said, this week we're going to be discussing Fear the Flames by Olivia Rose Darling, aka Gear of the Flames,
which is the name of the episode outline, if you noticed.
I saw that. I did see that. So at the time of this recording, the Goodreads rating is a 4.0 with 10,000 reviews. I don't know if that is the trad published or all of it together.
I think it's combined, because if you go on Goodreads, the cover that is shown is still the indie published cover and not the updated new cover. And
okay.
there isn't like a separate listing for the new cover.
Okay. This book was originally indie published in 2022, but has since been edited and trad published in September of this year. So it just had its trad release. It's an adult romantasy is the genre.
All right, and we're going to get into the book blurb, the book description. Princess, prisoner, runaway queen. Elowen Atara, princess of Imrath, came into the world like a firestorm made flesh. A princess with a link to five dragons should have been a blessing to her kingdom. But her blessing became a curse. The little girl in shackles became a knife-wielding woman with a thirst for retaliation. Now queen of Astilian, a secret kingdom she forged through strength and survival, Elowen needs a way to feed her rising population. She never thought she would have the force to take on Imrath, but when the snarky commander Caden Velis of Varavith, her father's enemy kingdom, offers her a deal she's been dreaming of for years, how can she not take it? Even if he ignites her temper like no other, Nothing unites two begrudging allies more than a common enemy. The pair of them, along with three accomplices, will navigate their partnership, politics, and attempt to pull off the greatest heist the world has ever known. Five people, all united through revenge, will have to transcend the odds stacked against them and infiltrate the impenetrable castle if they want to reap their rewards before someone reaps their souls. Putting aside their differences to accomplish a common goal, because everyone knows, vengeance is a promise signed in blood. That was a lot of really long sentences. There's so many commas there. We could have shortened that up. Made that a little punchier.
That was a lot to say that I don't think it's anything like exactly what happens in the book.
Okay, so we're summing up. So she's a runaway queen. She's a princess. She's got some dragons. She's looking for retribution against her kingdom. Right? And then there's a snarky Caden Velis. I don't know if I pronounced either kingdom properly. Estillion and Varavest is how I'm going with it. I did not audiobook these. I did read them, so I don't know the pronunciation.
I don't think the audiobook is out yet, anyways.
Oh, okay, perfect.
So,
also, this is not on Kindle Unlimited. I know we usually discuss that, but
yeah,
you do have to pay for it on Kindle.
Yeah, and so we are doing this book because Nikki was like, we have to do this book, we have to do this book. Oh my god, this book was so good. We have to do this book. And so that's why we're reading it, and we'll get more into that later. Okay, let's go into the trigger warnings.
So I was just thinking about how I pushed for this book so hard, and then you were like, you started reading it first, and you're like, so this happened, and I'm like, what?
You
thought I didn't even like know what book I was talking about.
I'm not even joking. Every time I would talk to her, she'd be like, that happens? I don't remember that. This book has dragons in it? And I was like, I swear to God, if we're reading the wrong book, I'm like, she's gonna kill you. But yeah, I was like, how do you not know it has about dragons? They're on the cover. Anyways, so we're gonna get into the trigger warnings of this book. I am going to read verbatim what she has on in the book at the very beginning. So it says, this book depicts sexual assault off page and not between the love interests, child abuse, graphic torture, castration, physical and mental abuse, and graphic sexual scenes that are entirely consensual. Other things that we put on there is a trigger warning for anxiety and PTSD. And yeah, so I do like that she puts it on the third page of the book, so you do see it before you get into it. And yeah, she's really not joking about some of the graphic content that's in this book. The torture is very graphic.
It is very graphic.
So if you have like a weak stomach about that, I would probably say this is not a book for you, because it does go into a lot of detail when it comes to that and the castration part. So the tropes, it's a possessive MMC, touch her and die, a forbidden romance, enemies to lovers. I disagree.
I think it's allies to lovers.
The snarky like comments and gets on each other's nerves, I got zero of that. Like, I got she was trying to make that happen, yeah. But I didn't feel that between the love interest.
Also feel like, and I didn't put it in the outline, I'm remembering it now, I feel like it was almost like insta-love, insta-lust.
Yeah.
Like it was so quick.
Yeah. There's a one bed and he falls first, which I agree with. He does fall first.
For sure.
Okay, let's get into our Pino ratings.
All right. So I gave this book 2.5 jalapenos. You know, there are 3 to 4 spicy scenes. They are graphically depicted, but they're pretty vanilla,
yeah,
in my opinion. So that's why I kind of gave it the low Pino rating. I mean, I think they were well written. I just think that there wasn't anything super non vanilla about it.
Yeah, they were spicy, but it's, yeah, pretty I give it a 3. Pretty standard stuff for a romanticy. I will say, however, I was very pissed off because you were like, one of the things that you were hyping about this book is you were like, oh, it was so like spicy and there's supposed to be more spice in this book and I just can't wait, and I was just expecting it to be spice, like a 4 or 5 jalapeno, And then we don't get our first scene until page 169. And there's only like 340 pages in this book. And I was like, you're kidding.
I got a lot of flack for this one from Kelsey, guys.
Yeah,
I did.
But I gave it a 3. So yeah, it was pretty standard stuff. All right, our sweet peppers.
Okay, so I gave it 3 sweet peppers, mostly because of Caden, you know, his use of nicknames, which I always love a fantasy nickname.
Yeah.
But it was a little crazy. I mean, by page 73, he already had multiple nicknames for her. He was calling her Angel and My Sweet Affliction and Little Shadow. It was definitely him just like falling really hard for her.
Which is why the enemies to lovers made zero sense, because they've known each other for like 5 seconds and he's already giving her like sweet little nicknames. I'm like, no, this isn't enemies to lovers.
She calls her Little Shadow within like literally 38 seconds of meeting her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I give it a 3.5 again for Caden, because he's, you know, such a protector. He's supposed to be like this really terrifying man that has no morals and no feelings, but like he does anything and everything for her. I also gave it a couple of pinos for Finian. It's very platonic, but you really see that love between people who consider themselves family.
Finian is Elowen's best friend, Elowen being the MMC.
Yeah, so
they definitely had a great like brotherly, sisterly bond.
Yeah, they're not related biologically at all, but they formed like a little family unit, and just the love that they have for each other, you can see it very clearly on page. And so I gave a couple of pinos. I know it's not really traditional for us to give pinos for like side characters, but I just couldn't help but mention it, because I just, it was so cute and loving and like, so yeah. I will say though that the first part of this book between Caden and Elowen was like a little weird. So
what do you mean?
It was just like their dynamic was really weird, and like she figures out he's like the feared commander or whatever, and somebody she's not supposed to trust, but she's like, hey, do it anyways. And then like they just become allies, and then they trust each other, but he's like very clearly into her and makes that very well known that he's really into, I don't know, it was just weird.
The thing that I thought that was a little weird about their dynamic, and I guess we can talk about Elowen a little bit, like, you know, she obviously survives a lot of childhood trauma and abuse, and, you know, many times in the beginning of the book, it's mentioned that she doesn't like to be touched, and that she doesn't like to be surprised by touch, but all of a sudden, Caden shows up, and he can just touch her all over, you know, casually, and she's not jumping when it's him, even if he's coming up behind her and, like, touching her or whatever. And I'm sure that that was deliberate on the author's part to be like, oh, she trusts him or feels comfortable with him. But it didn't seem to flow naturally. It felt a little disjointed to me.
Yeah, and especially because, you know, they're supposed to be enemies.
Right, and they've known each other for 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I just said, like, the beginning was a little weird. As, like, the book went on and their relationship went on, like, it became more normal. But it just seemed, yeah, it just seemed really, like, forced at the beginning. Like she was like, these people are gonna love each other, and it's like at the beginning, and I don't know, I just, it took me a minute to get into it with their story.
I also felt a little spice baited in the beginning, because they have this meeting in the woods and he like ties her hands together or something, and I was like, ooh, foreshadowing maybe for some like more interesting spice, because she was like, oh, untie me, and they were kind of flirting, but yeah, that doesn't ever come up.
No. Okay, so smell report.
Okay, Kelsey, are you ready? Okay, so Caden, he has a rich masculine scent, and he smells like
thyme
and spice.
How original.
All right, so MMCs that smell like pine.
All
King
of them.
King Rowan, Whitethorn. We have the Quicksilver guy. Smells like pine.
Every romantic-y book ever written, the male main character smells like a forest in some way or another.
The powerless guy smelled like pine.
Lorian smells like pine.
Not dirt. Yep.
Anyways, I can't with the pine. I can't with the pine smell. I do. Why? Why is it? Was there a club that we are not privy to that they said, okay, guys?
Well, there was an email that was sent out to every romantasy author, and it was like, listen, these are your choices.
If you want your
pine, musk, or like sandalwood, these are the options.
Yeah. If you want to be considered a romantasy author book, the main male character must smell like a forest in some way or another.
Do not smell like a forest.
Who?
Max Centaurus. Throwback to our first episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like Carissa Broadbent, the daughter of nowhere else. He smelled like lilac and ashes.
Okay.
And then we had the When the Moon Hatched guy. He smelled like smelted stone and crayon.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I prefer the stupid smell report, the smelted stone and cream, to pine.
Pine. It's just so not original. And then you go into stores and they make the candles of all these characters and they smell nothing like pine. All right. We got started on the last episode. I'll drop my hate for smelling like a forest or a tree character smell report. All right, moving on to characterization, plot, and world building. Okay, so we talked a little bit about Caden and Elowen anyway. So Caden is the army commander. He's, supposed to be super terrifying and the most dangerous man in all of their world and super feared. And he's very distinguishable because he has a scar on the side of his face. And
like every other male.
Like everybody else, yeah. And so she doesn't know it's him the first time that they meet. And then she figures out that it's him. And she's like, oh, no. But then, like, at the same time, she's like, this could really work to my advantage. And you think, like, that it's going to be one of those, like, true enemy to lover stories where he starts off and he's really rude and really mean. And he's not at all that way. Like, if it wasn't for the couple of scenes that we do get.
Right. Like, the that we're talking about in the trigger warning. So, yeah. Very gory kind of torture scenes. I would be like, she's lying.
Yeah. Yeah, if it wasn't for those, I would be like, yeah, his character arc is completely false. But it is there, but not with her and his friends. You do get to see that contrast in him that I think is really important. And then we have Elowen, which every time I read it, and I know this book came out first, but I just can't help but like think of When the Moon Hatched.
What was her name?
The book diaries. Art of Elowen Navant. So it throws me every time I read it.
I just think of Eowyn, Lord of the Rings.
Okay, yeah.
Every time I'm like, oh, Eowyn. Okay,
yeah. She confused me at the beginning. So you get a prologue, and it's her when she like it's the story of her being born, and like when she's a little kid, and then like. She gets the dragon eggs and that whole thing. And then, you know, she's the princess. And then the very first chapter, she's a queen of like a completely different area. And it took me so long. I'm like, wait a minute. And I was like, are these different people? Is this the same person? How does this happen? Like, how is she a princess of one place? But now she's a queen of another. And then like, yeah, she like makes up this kingdom and she just makes herself the queen of it. And then she's like, I don't know. It was very confusing. She's a princess and a queen.
The queen of this, basically this like very small population of people who are basically like exiles or outcasts or had also been traumatized, kind of like refugees. I mean, I think they said the population was like 2,000.
Yeah.
So she is the queen of this very tiny population. And I know we'll get more into world building, but they say her kingdom is surrounded by mist that like, that's why no one's ever found them, because it's like shrouded by this mist and this mist protects them. But yet they can leave the kingdom to go and steal goods and supplies and come back. And
it's,
I don't know.
It's a whole plot hole for me, because all of these people are exiled and they're all exiled to the same place. Right. And so you would then assume that once they start coming out, you know, and they go around to all these towns. Yeah. They raid stuff to be able to provide and she comes out and they were like, what is this? Like, she comes out and she's like, I'm the queen of this place. And nobody bats an eye at it. And they're like, oh, okay, whatever. But, like, you would think that they would figure it out. And she's like, nobody. And that was the whole thing. Like, Caden couldn't go with her because nobody's allowed to know where this place is and exists. And there's the whole plot hole because she teams up with the king to provide food to her kingdom. But
can you, like, call it a kingdom if the population is only 2,000 people?
I don't know.
I mean, basically, and I know that they were saying, like, the land that they settled on, it was, like land belonging to the gods. So it was kind of like this no man's land in between the two kingdoms. So it wasn't on Imrath soil and it wasn't on Varabeth soil.
It's not between the two kingdoms. It's all the way at the top.
I didn't look at the map.
I'll get into the map.
Great.
But yeah, so anyway, so she's like, yeah, she's a princess of a very well established kingdom. Then she's a queen of a not well established one. And then it almost seems like she just, like, doesn't give a shit about the kingdom that she created. And she's just like, okay, well, I'll come out as, like, I'm the lost princess. She's like, I've outgrown this place. I'm like, how? It's still growing. There's only 2,000 people. I don't know. So it took me a little bit to like her. I couldn't get into it.
That's fair. And so, like, the vibe that she gave me, it was totally giving, you know, Mother of Dragons, Khaleesi, Game of Thrones. She's giving these dragon eggs and, you know, no dragons have hatched in a bajillion years. And all of a sudden, because she's in the proximity of these dragon eggs, they're hatching. And now they're her, like, besties and she's bonded with them and she's just got these dragons.
Yeah. And, like, she can, like, feel the bond with all of the dragons. They can feel her, like, they can communicate, like, just how you would be able to, like, how Fae do when they have the mating bond and it snaps in place. She has that with the dragons. I don't know if it's, like, a, like, yeah, like a mother-children or if it's, like, a sibling thing. That's what I didn't get because she's very much a baby when she gets these dragons and then they hatch and they're also babies. And so I was very confused on that dynamic and how that worked with her and the dragons. And then, of course, they were separated and they were chained up and she was chained up and a whole thing. So in the beginning of this book, throughout this book, she doesn't have them. And her whole thing is she wants to go and save them.
That's the mentioned heist in the
Which it drove me insane. The heist. We can't find any other.
I know. I kept thinking like Six of Crows, Crooked Kingdom. Like, we're going on a heist. Like, that's a heist in my opinion. This was
a rescue mission, yeah, sure, because they're her dragons, so you're rescuing, like, your dragons, but it just bothered me that they kept referring to it as a heist. Called a quest or a mission, but not a heist. It bothered me.
So, I guess we should mention a little bit about the side characters. This is definitely, you know, her found family. She's got Finian, who is her, like you said, not biological brother, but they've kind of grown up together in her kingdom. Super close bond.
Yeah, he was exiled and they like came to, they were, I think, close to the same age when he was exiled. And so they finished growing up together and they, yeah, very much became, they call each other brother and sister. And then we have it's her uncle, right? On her mom's side.
Yes.
Aliard is how I.
That's how I was pronouncing it too. Again, I don't know the proper pronunciation. I don't think there's a pronunciation guide in the book. And yeah, so he's her uncle, the mother's brother, and he's the one that basically broke her out of the castle and took her to exile.
I was also very confused on that. I didn't know, it wasn't very clear off the bat if he escaped with her or if she was exiled.
He took her from the dungeons. They escaped. So, like, it was him and, like, a handful of, like, guards that were, like, on his side.
Okay.
That, like, took her from the dungeon to escape and, you know, eventually go to Estillion, the kingdom, and form this kingdom that no one knows about.
Okay. Yeah, so I didn't know if she was just exiled or if he, like, ran away with her. Because then she talks about there was multiple assassination attempts on her after she escaped / was exiled by her dad. So, yeah, I was just a little confused about that. Their dynamic, yeah, was a little weird.
their dynamic was weird because I think she was really, he gave me such odd vibes throughout. Like he just didn't seem, he didn't seem really like family. I don't know. And I won't say more than that because I think I want to talk more about him in the spoiler part. But he was not giving me like respectful vibes, like from like to her as a subject of her kingdom, or even as a subject of, you know, her previous kingdom, Imrith, and certainly not as a caregiver, an uncle or a family member. Like his, I don't know, the way he spoke to her and treated her just didn't really give me any kind of respectful vibes. And I don't know, I felt like he was sus.
Yeah, I did too, because either way, no matter where she was, she's obviously a queen of this made-up kingdom, and she was a princess at the other one. So either way, she was above him in rank. And yeah, he just seemed to always kind of talk to her as if she was like a bratty little child. But then he would be like, I mean, it was very much like most kind of abusive relationships where he would lash out at her and then it would come back and would apologize. So yeah, it definitely like I could not get a good feel for him throughout the book, and we'll go into more detail about.
I will give the author credit for that because I do think that's deliberate. And I think
Yeah.
that she did exercise that well. I think that, you know, his characterization was really fantastic.
Yeah. And we'll go more into detail about how that kind of comes about in the spoiler part of the review. Yeah, and then we have the five dragons. We kind of learn about them, not a lot, honestly. They're different colors.
Not all the time.
Yeah, they can
They like
change.
flash different colors,
They can
like a
camouflage
yeah.
like a chameleon almost. Yeah, they can change regarding their surroundings to kind of blend in, but then they're all
Like envision them like fireflies, like they're just like regular,
exactly.
and then all of a sudden they just like light up blue, and then it goes away.
I will say I am a little confused on the actual size of them. It's not really described very well on how big they are. I know kind of that's probably a little bit deliberate because they're taken from her when she's like four and they're hidden away from her, and so she doesn't, you know, see them. Except for like when she's in her dreams and stuff like that. But yeah, I was kind of confused on their size. As far as world building go, I do have something to say. So if you listen to Powerless, you heard about my rant over the map.
You mean every week you ran over the map?
Yes.
Okay. That's a nice map, Kelsey. Look, it's all on one side. It's
Yes.
colorful. It's clearly labeled. That's a
This
lovely
is how
map.
you should do maps if you're gonna put them in the book. There's nothing in the crease, nothing important other than water. So you can see everything that you need to see. You know, you can they and it's colorful and it's Parisian. But other than that, this is how a map should be if they're gonna be in a book, okay? Not where this is in the middle and you can't see anything of importance. So I will give them that they did the map correctly in a book.
Despite the fact that it's roughly exactly the same size and shape as Prithian.
I mean, down to the borders. Yeah, it's Prithian. That's the only negative. So, yeah, if anybody could take a look at that map and then make all of your maps just like that.
Not Prithian.
Not Prithian, but put them on the page like that. I will forever, I will read and buy your book if you can show me that you made a pretty map that actually fits in the pages correctly. I
Kelsey
will,
says, show me the map.
I don't even care what it's about. I will buy it and I will read it. Okay, so
So
anyways.
world building. I didn't think the world building was that strong. I thought of this basically as generic fantasy kingdom. We know that, you know, some kingdoms just kind of like have magic and people use magic. Some kingdoms don't really have magic, but they don't outlaw magic. We don't really get any distinct political systems. There's no like political intrigue. It's not like any town stands out from any other town. Everything was just really, I mean, and I guess in that way it's easy to digest. But there wasn't anything that struck me as cool or different about this world than any other generic fantasy land.
Yeah, I will say that's very accurate. And I'll go a step further. And when you look at the map, and I kept having to go back and forth because, yeah, I was very confused on where things were, that like locations that they were at and where they were according to the book. And I was trying to like match everything. And it wasn't, yeah, it just wasn't coming together easily enough that I could skip going back to the map. Something that really kind of got me though is when you look at the map, and Immerath is down at the bottom. And when you look at it looks like it's like this. You would, and I have the book up so Nikki can see it.
Yeah,
This
because
looks
I for
like
sure didn't even look at the map at all.
all grass and stuff, right? Like it looks like you just plains and like you could ride a horse or whatever through all of it to get to wherever you need to. And the biggest things that they have highlighted are the castles, obviously. And then we got into reading the book. And when they make it into Immerath, they're islands.
They are?
Yeah, apparently in the book, they take little boats and they go to different islands, and the people all live on the islands, and then they come to the big island where the castle is. And then I was like, wait a minute, I didn't see that. And then I went to the map and it looks nothing like that.
I have no words because I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
I do remember vaguely like the boats, but
Yeah.
yeah, I just didn't
Because
absorb.
they're. She describes it as it's dotted islands and they have all of these interconnecting channels and rivers, and you take
So like this.
boats. Yeah. You take boats into each of the islands, and then everybody comes to the big island because that's where the castle's at. And I was like, this is not how the map is described whatsoever. I don't know if that was a change from Indie to
Well, what's on the other
Travelist.
side of the map? Is that the, oh,
These are
that's
those
not the
other,
island.
these are the,
Okay, that's
these are
the
the other
other.
kingdoms.
Okay.
So the one, this one, Galkin or whatever, I think allies with,
Maybe
anyways.
we shouldn't say that.
So they're the other ones that, do whatever.
Yeah, okay. So
In
there's
their
two other
book.
kingdoms there. I just thought that maybe because I like said so I didn't even look at this and I didn't even know there were trigger warnings in the book. I just read.
Yeah. Because I believe this here, I don't know. No, that's fair. Anyways, yeah, so that was a big discrepancy for me that kind of like took me for a minute.
The only thing that I picked up on that was different, like about the kingdoms, because apparently I did not think critically enough about the islands because I didn't pick up on that at all. But the only thing that was different was that, like, she likes the pastries better in Imra. Like, they were like raspberry pastries. It's
Yeah.
like, the, yeah. And I'm like, all right, this is what we're taking away. Oh, and I guess they did mention the clothing was a little different. Like, in Varaveth, the clothing was like flowy and like springtime, and that, the Imra was like a little stuffy and like high collars. Like, they did talk about the dress fashion, but really. There's not
Yeah.
much differentiating these
Yeah,
kingdoms.
this is definitely very baby fantasy. So if you're not used to reading the genre and you want to get into it, this is an excellent starting point. And I'm pretty sure they're just human, right?
Yeah, they're just all humans.
Yeah. So yeah, there wasn't a lot to the world building. I was actually pretty okay with that. I thought there was enough in the plot that the not having a ton of world building was fine for me. But yeah, I did notice that there were some discrepancies and some things were like kind of hard to wrap my head around. But it's better than century years.
True.
Okay, and then I know you have some things that you want to say about
So
the writing style.
the writing style just okay, it just seemed really disjointed to me. It seemed like she herself doesn't have her full voice yet as a writer. Like she would just be talking about something like generic or mundane, and then at the end of that paragraph, just throw in this like really dramatic statement or metaphor, and it just didn't fit up. It's like, I wish I could have pulled an example up, but I was just like, what? Like, what are you like? Almost like she was trying to throw, like, to make it sound literary,
Yeah.
to throw in like literary prose, and I'm like, that's not, and that's fine. You want to be a literary fantasy, like, I would consider. When the Moon Hatched, I think that was very beautiful prose and,
Yeah.
bordering on this like kind of literary fantasy, like just beautiful writing and flowery descriptions and whatnot. But in this instance, it did not work for me.
Yeah. I will say that, especially within the first probably 60 or so pages, I was getting really confused. Like I said, they read the prologue and then the first chapter, and I was like, I was confused. I had to reread it a few times to then like kind of grasp what they were saying. Like it's the same person, and it just didn't flow very well. And then some of the exchanges that they were having, and then that almost like cutscenes, like she gets with Kaden, and then they agree to like be allies or whatever. And then she's like, oh, I gotta like have a test or whatever to see if I can trust you. And then the next thing, and then she's like, oh, she says something about like, I gotta read a book. And then the next scene is like, they are somewhere completely different and they're going through the woods. And he brings up like, oh, well, what's the book that you're like, what is the book that we're searching for? Something, why can't you just be normal and like buy it from a bookstore? And I was like, what the hell? And I was like, I had to go back and I checked to make sure I wasn't missing pages, because I was so confused because there was no segue into that. And then I finally, like, it clicked, like, oh, this is the test that she's putting to him to like go and take this book. And then it happened again with something else. Oh, She was talking about, she was having a conversation with Aliard or whatever, and she says, oh, I should have filled a trough with coffee and drunk from it like a horse. And I was like,
I remember you texting me about that.
To do with anything. If it's, and I think she was meaning like in order to get through the conversation with him, that's like 7 extra words, put it in there and it makes sense. Like it didn't, like the paragraph didn't make any sense. I'm like, why are we talking about drinking coffee like a horse? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I finally picked up on it, on what she was like trying to say, but it's like, it didn't take any more effort to just add it in there so that everybody knows, like, you're connecting it between she needs caffeine to get through this conversation. I don't know. It bothered me.
The thing that bothered me the most is kind of around that same time period. So she makes the deal with Commander Velis, right? And then she goes back to tell her advisor about the deal. And before she even says what the deal is, he's going off on this tangent about, you know, and he's like yelling and he's dramatic and he's like, you've sold your soul. And, oh, what does he say? He says that she bartered her soul, but she hasn't even told him what the deal is yet. You know what I mean? So it was things like that where it's like, why is character B reacting at 100? When they don't even know what character A is about to say.
Yeah. It was really the transition between ending one chapter in location and then into another, because right before they go to have that conversation, her and Finian are like having breakfast. And then the very next page, he's like banging his head on top of like some beam going into the guardhouse. And I was like, what? I don't know. And especially for it have gone through a revision and more editing and being trad published, I was like, why aren't we picking up on this and kind of clearing this up? It got better. I will say it got better.
It did.
The further we got into the book, but the first 6 or so pages were really kind of rough to get through with the writing style. It just was very choppy and it didn't flow. And I was like, getting confused.
I'm wondering, because I read the indie version when it first came out in 22. So I read years ago the first iteration of this book. And in the spoiler review, I'm going to do a little compare and contrast about some things that were left out. And I wonder if it was difficult for her, because this is definitely not super different, but it is definitely different from the original iteration of the book. And I just wonder if that's maybe why the writing is choppy, because she took the bones of the original and, you know, added things in and maybe just kind of didn't. It's almost like she just, like you said, didn't add in the transitions.
Yeah.
She's like, I'll keep the action or this dialogue or whatever and then add this in, but I'm not going to lead you from point A to point B.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's get into our ratings. Nikki?
I gave this book, and I think it's generous, I gave it 3.25 stars. I did have a good time with it. I did like Kaden. It was entertaining. I'm giving it 3.25 just purely on vibes and entertainment factor. That's it. That's what I'm giving it.
I actually ended up giving it 4 stars. I hated this book at the beginning. Like I
I know,
said,
I was feeling so guilty.
the first 60 pages, it was so rough to get through. And I kept questioning Nikki because all she would do was rant and rave about this book and how wonderful it is, and oh my God, she's so excited that they added more things into it. And then she was like, "What are you talking about? I don't remember any of that happening. It has dragons." Like, so then I was like, kind of like, oh God. And then I was like, but we already put out a teaser saying we're reading it, so we can't change our minds. And then I pushed through, and around the 100-page mark, it picked up. It got really good. The plot was very interesting. It was fast paced, even though like I disagree with heist, the word heist and some other stuff. The spice was doing it for me. The like graphic tortury scenes were done, even though they were very graphic, were done well with the plot, that it wasn't like a ugh, like that's too much. It makes sense. And I don't want to say like I enjoyed it, but like it was easier for me to
It was
digest.
vindicating as a reader. You could,
You could get behind it. And the romance after the first, like I said, little bit was doing it for me. I don't know, it ended up being a really well-rounded book at the end, like at the about 50% mark, and at the end, to the point where I
And
was,
I really enjoyed the ending as well, I think.
to the point where I was like desperately looking, like, when is the second one coming out? Has it come out yet? Like, I really wanted to kind of jump into it. So yeah, I ended up giving it a 4 stars. It really kind of 180'd itself. I think you could really see where that revision and editing came through. I wish it would have been from the prologue, but I mean that's no here nor there. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
So, Kelsey, is it for yourself?
It is for my shelf. I do have my copy that will stay with me and then take it to a Polycon. So I will be keeping it. So it is from my shelf.
It is also for my shelf. And I do think that I should add the little anecdote about how at one point I had 4 copies of this book.
Yes.
So, our dear listener friend, Phoebe, who works at Barnes and Noble, I was like, Phoebe, can you get us 2 copies of this book? Because we want to read it for the pod because it's not on KU. And Phoebe was like, yeah, Barnes doesn't have it. Like, there's no like order date. And so I took that as Barnes is never getting this book. So I went to an indie bookstore, yay, supporting indies, and bought 2 copies. And then the very next day, Phoebe showed up to work with 2 more copies. So then I had 4 copies of the book.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna take them all. Well, like one was for Kelsey, but I'll be taking the rest to a Polygon.
guys, so that is it for our spoiler-free part of Fear the Flames, aka Gear of the Flames by Olivia Rose Darling. This is normally where we tell you what next week's book is going to be. Given our situation with the hurricane and internet, maybe not internet, not sure when this podcast will be released. So I'm not sure if we're going to get to the book that we had planned for next, or if we're going to have to delay it a week. So if we're able to, fingers crossed, and I'm able to find internet access, we will be doing the next one, hopefully, is going to be a little different from our normal one. So we wanted to kind of put like a funny one in there, kind of around like Halloween-ish kind of feels. So it would be that time I got drunk and saved a demon, is hopefully going to be our next episode that we're able to put out. If not, and we have to miss a week, then I unfortunately will be missing from the next episode. My daughter is turning 1, and so I'm going to
Yay, baby
be, baby
Scarlet.
Scarlet, I am taking a week off so I can be with friends and family and celebrate my little girl as she turns 1 year old. It's also my husband's birthday on the 24th, so they're 3 days apart. So I should probably spend some time with him as well for his birthday.
But have no fear because I will still be here and we're gonna have a special guest. Our friend Phoebe, who you guys hear us talk about all the time, is gonna come on and fill in for Kelsey, and we're going to be doing the super popular serial killer romance, Butcher and Blackbird.
So stay tuned to see which one you get. If we're not able to bring you the demon book, we'll try and fit in maybe a bonus episode somewhere so we can bring you that content because we have started it. But yeah, so we'll move into the spoiler part now. So if you want to read this book and don't want anything spoiled, you're going to jump off now. If you don't mind having things spoiled for you, then feel free to stay on. But again, thank you guys so much for all of your follows and for listening. And we know it's been kind of weird the last couple of weeks with the hurricanes. Thanks for hanging in there with us. And we try to get back to
our regularly scheduled programming in November.
Hopefully. Yeah, we'll try and make sure to bring you content as normal. But in the meantime, again, thank you guys so much for, and especially for the people who reached out to us to make sure that we were okay. We really appreciate all of that. Okay, so now let's jump into the spoilers.
Okay, so I'm going to actually, I know we put this at the bottom, but I'm going to jump ahead and I want to talk about the indie version versus the trad published version. And this was something that really, really, really disappointed me. Okay, so in the indie version, there's like a 2-week-ish time period where they're separated. Caden is like at the front and she's in the castle. And this is kind of like early on in the book, before any spicy scenes, when they're starting to like have cutesy feelings for each other and they're kind of going more from that like bickering, I kind of hate him, to flirting. And they're sending messages back and forth. Like he's like actively on the battlefield doing battlefield things, but he's like spending the time to write her like cute little handwritten notes and then spare a soldier from the front lines to bring them to her and like wait for her to write back. And this is maybe like 5 or 6 like different correspondences. And it was really cute. It was a really cute part of the first book. And I don't know why they left it out.
Yeah.
I thought it did so well as that bridge to kind of like, you know, to watch their relationship develop, which I feel like we didn't really watch their relationship develop at all. It was just like right away, everyone's got feelings for everyone else. And
yeah, and that kind of makes, like, now that you talked about that, kind of makes more sense because there is, in the trad published version, that part where he's like, oh, I should be back to you or whatever, and they share, like, a suite, you know, they have their own bed.
Yes, so that the notes happen right before that, because remember when she, like, leaves in the middle of the night because she's, like, worried about him and he goes to the front lines? In the indie version, that's kind of why she does that, because she's not really, like, hearing from him and she's like really concerned, and that's right after all these correspondences.
Yeah, in the trying to publish version, she says that, like, she's like, you would have told me if something would have come up, so I figured like you had to have been like dead or dying because you didn't respond or you didn't message me or something like that. And I was like, when did we establish that that's a thing between the two of you? And yeah, because she like jumps over into the other, like from her balcony to his balcony, and she takes off in the middle of the night and tells no one. And I was like, that's really random. Like, why are we doing that for this man? But now that you say that about the notes, that actually makes more sense and definitely should have been left in.
Yeah. And it helps to kind of develop that sweet pino thing on his side, because it's like he's commanding armies and he's, you know, in the midst of battle, but he's stopping to flirt note. Like,
yeah,
you know, it was just, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sad that I didn't get to read those. You got some questions.
I do. So, Aliard, that's how we're pronouncing it, right? The advisor, the uncle. His betrayal.
Yeah.
Did you see that coming? Like, what?
I didn't see it coming in the first book. That's for sure. So, the thing between their dynamic is her dragons burn his sister, and he absolutely adored his sister, and so it made it kind of weird that he went through all the trouble to like have her escape when he very clearly didn't care for her dragons, but he knows how much she does and that she would do anything for her dragons, but he was just like, I guess, hoping she just wouldn't. I don't know.
Do you think, and I just had this thought right now, I'm sorry to interrupt you, do you think that he took her so that she would be even further away from the dragons? Because during the betrayal, he's like, they're monsters. And
I think so.
So he didn't go into exile and save her for her well-being of being friggin' like tortured and beaten in this dungeon, but to separate her and the dragons.
I think that after it came to light, his betrayal is when I started thinking he took her to be a political pawn eventually, and that he was going to use her to gain leverage on something, which I think he ends up even saying, like, oh, well, your dad said that, you know, nothing would happen to us and he just wants you back. And that's after, like, her dragons is, like, she freed her dragons.
But if he wanted to be an Imrath so badly the whole time, like, he didn't have to leave. That's why I'm saying, like, what was his motivation? Because it wasn't out of her well-being.
I don't know if he thought that, like, I think he thought maybe two things would happen. Either she would get her vengeance on her dad and kill him and ascend to the throne, and then he would be, like, the right-hand man. And I think it was all about power. And he wanted as much power as he could get. And so no matter how that was going to be, whether he was going to sell her back to her dad if she didn't end up killing him, or if he was going to sell her off to another kingdom to, like, gain more political power. That's kind of what I got after the betrayal came about, especially because, you know, he ends up, like, hitting her, which is, like, a big thing for her because she was abused by so many people. And he ends up, you know, hitting her and pushing her to the ground or whatever. And yeah, I did not see it coming in the first book. I thought it was going to be something that would have been further along in the story. But yeah.
Yeah, I was just getting weird vibes from him. I mean, I didn't get the vibes that he was wholesome at all.
Yeah.
So I wasn't, like, surprised, but I don't think I saw it coming.
Yeah, especially because he was so anti against her having a relationship with Caden, that's kind of what made it click to my mind, like, oh, he was planning on using her to gain power somewhere else, because...
Right, like, through marriage to another kingdom.
Yeah, because when she says about the treaty or whatever, and he's signing it, he specifically says, is there a marriage clause in the contract?
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. Which brings us to a different marriage clause.
Yes.
So... as we know, at the end, Caden challenges the throne of Erebeth, and he says he can do this as the commander of the army if he's married to someone of royal blood. So she, Elwyn, obviously immediately thinks that this whole thing has been a plot, and he's been lying to her, and that he was using her to become king.
Yeah. First of all, the marriage clause was wild to me. That was a plot twist I did not see coming. Although I was questioning, I was like, she comes out, she says she no longer wants to be the queen of the secret kingdom. And then she specifically says that she could not live in Imrath because of everything that she endured there. So she was, no matter what happens, she's not going to become queen of Imrath. So then I was like, and she doesn't want to marry the guy from Galkin or whatever.
No, I kind of got the impression that she just wanted to, like, kind of just go off and live her life with her dragons and just, like, so, not be in charge of anything.
But like, she so badly, like, she wanted to be royal. Like, I mean, she is royal, but, like, she made herself the queen. She likes to be in the dressing, which is so different than we usually see from, like, people that end up being queens of all of these places. Like, they don't want to be in the dresses, they don't want to do the court thing, they don't want to live in the castles, but she very much does, because she even says that as she's walking through Imrath, like, what it would have been like to walk through these hallways free and not be in a dungeon. And she can't remember the time where she used to be able to do that and, like, have her own suites and all of that stuff. So, like, she wants that life. So then I was confused. I was like, how is she gonna obtain that? Because she doesn't want this place. She says she's outgrown that place. She doesn't, like, want it. She doesn't want to be married to the prince of the other place. I'm like, so how is that going to be obtained? And then the marriage clause and then the duel or whatever comes into play. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was like, that's how it's going to happen.
I do not think that Caden had that plan.
No.
Caden just kind of spur of the moment was like, like, I think he knew that the ruler was shit, because he clearly had no respect for the King of Barabbath at all.
No.
Very obviously. So I think maybe he was like, hey, I could overthrow this guy, but I don't think that she was ever a pawn in his plan at all.
He says that he didn't even know about the clause until, like, way later, and kind of found it by accident.
But she gets so fucking mad. She gets so mad.
She does. She does get really mad. And I think it was just because all of it was happening all at once, because, like, they're in this duel and And I think had that other King Igor, well, I don't remember what his name was, hadn't been like, yeah, well, we're just going to give you back to, like, your dad and fuck this treaty or whatever. Like, he probably wouldn't have gone to the lengths of doing that. Like, I think he was all about doing whatever Elowen wanted to do. And I think he asked her kind of what she wanted after all of this was over. But after the king was like, yeah, like, we've brokered a treaty with Emirath and we're going to give you, like, you back to your dad, he felt like he didn't have a choice. Like, I think he was doing it to protect her, like he does right. everything else. But she's just been so, like, she can't trust any of the men in her life. And this is coming off the heels of Aliard and his betrayal, that she just felt like this was just another one and that she was being a pawn in somebody else's game again. And so she was pissed. And I think it all happening all at once, like, and then she's like, I have to marry you. Like, they just started, you know, she just accepted that she could be with him because that was the whole thing. Like, she's like, I can't be with him. Like, and she finally was like, well, fuck it. Like, I can, if I want to be with him, I'm going to. And so she was just, it was all happening all at once that I feel like, I don't know. I think she was kind of valid to be pissed off at it, but I don't know. The third act breakup sometimes just don't.
I don't know. It just didn't hit for me because when you think about his actions throughout the whole book, I don't know. Actions to me, and it's like, if this is so different from the behavior that he was showing, I don't know. I think I would have had a little more faith in
him. Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure that their, like, little third act breakup won't last very long.
No, I'm sure.
Into the second book, because they'll finally sit down and have a conversation like adults. But yeah, I don't know.
So something that you mentioned just kind of brought something else up. You know, she says that she doesn't want to rule Imrath, and she basically, you know, she wants to kill the king. She wants to take her dragons. She, you know, at multiple points, she's ready to go to war with Imrath. And she even says, she's like, I'm ready to destroy every single soldier. And that is also different from our normal female FMCs, because she doesn't care about the loss of life. She's not like, oh, these people are innocent and I need to protect them. They had nothing to do with me. She's like, I'll burn this whole fucking kingdom to the ground.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was kind of shitty. Like, those are innocent people. Like the army, fine. Armies, you sign up, you know you're going to fight and die, whatever. But, like, you're gonna dragon fire your entire kingdom and you don't care about, like, the peasants and the regular people who had nothing to do with your imprisonment. You know, yeah. I thought that was kind of weird. Like, there was no desire for her to, like, I will fix the kingdom. I will make it better. I will improve the kingdom. It was just like, I will kill everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but I think it also is done as a way to show that her and Kaden are very similar and that they can really relate to one another and that way, like, they work because they are, like, these, like, you know, terrifying individuals who can kill without feeling or remorse or being guilty or anything like that. But then, like, they truly care about the people that they consider their families and that they are really, like, he can go out and murder, like, he does in front of her and murder all of these people. And she, like, doesn't bat an eye at it or think that he's repulsive. And then she can turn around and do the same thing like she did to that guard that, you know, tortured her when she was a child and everything that she did to him. And he, like, you know, was perfectly okay with it. So I think that's kind of why she did it. I don't agree with it, but I can understand why the author was
trying to draw parallels between the two.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. The other thing. So at the end, she has that priestess, the fire priestess, like, shows up. I thought she was going to marry them. That's what I thought was going to happen, but that's not what happened. And she's, like, strengthening the bonds between her and her dragons. And then Elowen's like, something's still off. And then I thought, like, maybe he's going to join the bond, you know, because, like, the gold swirls are going from her up. She has a crown. And then they're going around his arms. And I'm like, oh, they're all going to be joined together. But then she realizes, no, it's because I haven't ridden my dragon. And then she all of a sudden just instinctively knows she needs to jump off the cliff and ride the dragon. Like, how do you have this knowledge? Like, there are no other dragon riders. There are no other dragons in the world. Yeah, but she was like, I felt it. Like, I knew. And I'm like, do you impulsively know that you need to jump off a cliff and jump on your fucking dragon?
No,
No.
it's bonds, you know, they're old.
All right.
But
Fine. You can just write it off as bonds. It's fine.
I will say, to draw another parallel to Game of Thrones, the like Red Witch is also in Game of Thrones.
She also uses the phrase Dance of Dragons, which is the best book in the Game of Thrones series.
Yeah, so it's very it's drawn parallels to Game of Thrones for sure.
Which is fine. We know everything's been done before. We know that,
Yeah.
tropes are recycled and whatever. And
Yeah. But that's all I could picture.
speaking of recycling things, sorry, you go on. You go
Because
first.
all I could picture was the woman from Game of Thrones who's the Red Witch. And every time they talked about it, that's immediately who popped into my mind, especially with the little amulet. Oh,
I
okay.
love those thoughts. Those were great. Series not so great. You get it. So about pulling inspiration from other authors. This, I don't know, it stuck out like a fucking flashing red light to me when she uses the phrase like calls to like. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. What is the first thing you thought of when you heard like calls to like?
It's not going to be what you think. Shadow and Bone.
Okay, well, fine. The first thing, Sarah J. Maas. Because the whole time, right, when they're, it's got to be ACOTAR series, when they're like looking for the Book of Breathings and all these other magical things, and they're like calls to like, and they just repeatedly say it over and over and over again, and that's like all I could think about, and I was like, you're not Sarah J.
Yeah, they mention it in Shadow and Bone too. Like calls to like, it's like the whole thing when they're like learning their powers or whatever. And yeah, like calls to like, it's in the
See, I didn't
Grishaverse.
finish that series. Maybe that's.
Maybe. But yeah, that's what the first thing that I like
And I
thought
know it's
of.
like just a phrase and all, but like, I don't know.
It's very popular in
That's
fantasy.
what you're saying.
It is. It's very
Okay.
pop. It's just like, you know, how they have to smell like pine. They like calls to like, I don't know. I see a lot anytime there's a book that has to do with magic. It's very much like that. And too, like the what's that series? The Dark Fever. Karen Mooring,
Moaning.
Moaning.
Yeah.
I can't remember what that series is called, but they talk about it in that too. And those books were written a long time ago.
Yeah, they're kind of they're one of the blueprints for like paranormal romance, right? I mean, they're old.
It's
They're older
fae.
series.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
fae. So the Seelie and Unseelie and all of that. And they talk about light calls to like.
I follow a TikTok creator, a book talk creator that is reading those right now and says they're fantastic. I've never read them. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been a while for me. And that's the point where I had like the little pocketbooks, like the very first ones that came out that are extremely hard to read. It's been a while, but I read like the first three. There's so many. I think she's still making that.
I think she is too.
She's very much like J.R. Ward, where she can't put it down.
I can't even with J.R. Ward. I'm not
I
even
don't
gonna
know.
start. I'm not even gonna start.
They're fantastic, though. The audiobooks, at
I can't
least.
commit.
But anyways, so yeah, it's very popular within fantasy, especially when there's some type of like magic system in place, which Fear of the Flames kind of has. Yeah, like you talked about it. Imarath, I think they can use magic. And then in Varith, or whatever it's called, it's banned, it's outlawed.
Yeah, not quite. So in Varavith, they can use magic freely. In Immerath, people just generally don't use magic, but it's not like outlawed per se. It's like taboo.
I thought
Because she mentions that he can still kind of like find magic and use it.
well, see,
Like,
I thought it was the other way around, where in Varavith it was outlawed because the king doesn't hold magic.
yeah, I thought it was the other way around.
No.
But don't trust me because you know that I don't remember things after
Yeah,
I read
no,
them.
because King Aegor, whatever his name is, doesn't have magic, so he like outlawed it, and which is why like she's like, "Oh, you have this?" Because like his territory and everything is in like his house is in Varavith and stuff, and uses magic, and she's like, "What are you?" You know, because it's like been outlawed, and then in Imarath, I don't think they really talk about it. They either don't have it or they can use it. No, I'm pretty sure they use it because the boats are powered by magic.
You're asking the wrong person.
I'm
I
pretty
know I
sure.
read this book,
But I
but
still
I remember.
remember. I think that's
Which is
the
I read this book twice, technically.
in her little secret kingdom, I don't think they have it.
No, and I think that's just because they don't have anything.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Like I don't think that they have like Like, it's not outlawed. They just don't have it. Just like they don't have crops. Like, they just don't have it.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's very much like up in the mountains. It's all cold there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, anything else you want to say about this book? Got anything else?
I got nothing. That's all my thoughts.
Okay. So that is going to be our review of Fear the Flames, a.k.a. Gear the Flames, of Olivia Rose Darling.
Never know what
that's. Well, we can say before, we're unsure what is coming to you in the week after this, because don't know exactly when this is going to post.
But it's going to be Halloween-y, regardless.
Yep, it's either going to be The Time I Got Drunk and Saved a Demon, or Butcher and Blackbird. Both are great books, so you'll either hear from me or you won't, and it'll be another week after that, and then I will be back. So again, thank you guys so much for listening. We will be posting on our social media platforms at kind of about what's coming up next, so you can always check there to see exactly what we're going to be reviewing. We will post that as soon as we have an update. It really all is just going to depend on if I can find internet, guys. So
thanks for being patient with us, guys. And please remember to interact with us. We never talked about the hair washing.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. Yes. Okay.
I can save it for next time.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Okay. So coming to you next time, we're going to talk about the hair washing trope.
Yeah. So either...
Put in capital letters.
So either Nick, I will discuss it, or she's going to yell at Phoebe about it, and Phoebe's just going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? Anyways, that'll be a good time. Either way.
Thank you, buddies. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, bye, guys.